Does your computer repair business website need work? Go to techsitebuilder.com and get the official PodNuts method for making a site that works. Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 256. 256 is a very good computer number. We're on the line with Scott DeRider, and Scott's calling us from Binghamton, New York. What's going on with you, Scott?
Not much. Just trying to beat the heat, stay cool, and, you know, just make sure that my customers' computers are, you know, pretty much cleaned out so where they don't overheat.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Especially, man, these last couple of days have been scorchers.
Oh, I know. Well, it's besides either the rain or the heat or the humidity. I mean, it's been killing people.
Where's Binghamton? Am I saying it right?
Yeah, Binghamton is pretty, it's what they call upstate New York. It's about 2.5 hours, 3 hours out of New York City. It's right off Interstate 81.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, so what do you do up there? You got your own computer repair business, right?
Yep.
And what's the name? What's the name of that? And what's the website of that?
The name of the company is Big Boy Computer Solutions, and my website is www.bigboycs.com.
Cool. Now, you also have bigboycomputersolutions.com, right?
Correct. Yeah, I was having a little bit of issues with one website, the one that I originally had created. So what I did was I registered another name through GoDaddy and just kind of did a forward. So whenever anybody types in Big Boy CS, it'll automatically redirect them right to Big Boy Computer Solutions without having any issues.
Yeah. You know, I like Big Boy Computer Solutions better because it's got the word computer in there and it's, it looks, it relates more. You know what I mean? It can relay more information. I think it's good to have the word computer somewhere in your, URL, but
yeah, it does. But I just kind of figured, you know, it's kind of like you hear like this one website is called like the blank helpwanted.com. It says, you know, long name but great results. It's kind of like a place where you can go find jobs. I'm the type of person that wants to type the shortest URL possible. If I could get a tiny URL, I would.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Yeah, I mean, you can strive for that, but that's so hard now. Actually, they released a new domain extension, .co. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I did see that. I was looking into that, but I was like, you know what? I'm happy with what I got. I've already got over 1,000 business cards out there. Plus, my car's already got, you know, $145 worth of vinyl graphics on there, basically sitting there giving the website. Yeah. I don't want to have to go have it relettered.
Yeah, no, you're set. And I don't recommend people jumping into the new domain extensions because there's going to be more coming out and there's going to be more. So if you always think you're going to try to like stay ahead of the curve and get the latest extensions, I wouldn't recommend it because they're just going to keep coming out with more and more and more. .com is what people know. I mean, people who don't know anything about computers, they type .com and they don't even know what it means, but they always type it. So I think it's still best to have a .com name.
Yeah, there are so many out there. I mean, you got .net, you got .biz, and you got .ca, .uk, .ch. I mean, you know, tons. It's like you got your own little alphabet.
Exactly. All right, well, tell us a little bit about your business. Tell us how you're doing with your business. I know you said when you first called, you're busy, and then you could get into whatever you did prepare for us.
Oh, yeah, pretty much what I do is that, you know, I try to offer flat rate pricing to all of my customers, including even my business customers, because we have, you know, Best Buy. We also have Staples here. Plus, we also have a little, you know, small mom and pops. But I've been running into the problem is that where people are not happy where they go, they're getting overcharged. They're not liking their service. I've been in the customer service field for about 13 years, and I was running my business before at a flat rate pricing. It was doing really well, and then just, you know, the market dropped and just kind of fell out. And then I recently relocated to Binghamton probably about 4 or 5 years ago, reopened up, you know, started looking around, and there were companies out there that were sitting there charging $60 for just taking your computer and putting it up on the bench.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I sit there, I charge, you know, somebody $19.99 for an on-site diagnostic. I also offer free pickup and delivery anywhere inside of Broome County, which is probably about 50 to 60 miles either way, north, south, east, or west from where I'm located.
$20 diagnostic for you. Go and check it out. Okay.
But I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm trying to get my name out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, I do also work another full-time job, so where, you know, I do have other income, you know, supporting it. But until I can get a customer following and a customer base, you know, I'm going to keep my prices a lot lower than the competition. And then once I start building it up, then I'm going to slowly start increasing it, but right. I'm not going to increase it to the point of
ridiculousness.
Yeah, like where I'm charging $139 for, you know, a virus removal.
Right. Which is not crazy for a lot of people out there, just so you know. That's not a terrible price. It's not.
Oh, I know that.
But the thing.
Oops, sorry about that, Tech.
What's that?
That's exactly. Like, whoops, that's my price.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, hey, I've even been trained by these guys that my prices were too low. But how long have you had this business up and running?
I just recently got my DBA back in December, got my certificate of authority and everything else like that. So, I mean, I've been running this for about 6 months. I'm running on average of anywhere between maybe 12 to 15 computers a month.
Okay, good. So you're doing it part-time. You still, yeah, part-time. You still have a full-time job, 9-to-5 job?
Well, more of like a 6-to-2.
Okay. All right, cool. And how much do you charge then? Okay, you do the diagnostic for 20. Then how much do you charge for the other stuff, the actual repair?
Oh, man, I don't even know if I want to tell you because I might get laughed out of the room because my prices are extremely low.
You don't have to tell us.
No, I'll tell you. I mean, pretty much my highest price is like $69, and that's for doing like a data backup to like an external hard drive. That's minus the drive and everything else like that.
Right.
Operating install, you know, is like $35 minus, you know, if they have their own disk, then that's good.
Right.
I don't try to overcharge because, you know, I mean, I see all these people on Craigslist, they're like $20, I'll fix anything. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, sure. Right. But me, I'm trying to sit there and I don't even advertise on Craigslist because it's for a bunch of scammers.
Yeah. So you know, there are people that have success with, I have to say that, but like it goes saying that Craigslist is a jungle. You're going to find a lot of goofs on there, a lot. But you can't base your price off what people are saying on Craigslist because they're just nuts. We should set you up with a Tech Adventures on a one-on-one consulting call.
Well, yeah, maybe we should.
Yeah, we got to get them on for that. That'd be good. I'm going to start sending people who have too low prices to Tech Adventures. That's actually Chris Berry from TechAdventures.com. I think, Scott, that your prices are too low, but that's... Well, let's move past that because I did the same thing when I was in your shoes. I know what's going through your mind, and it worked for me to build my business. So I can't just come out and say raise your prices. If you're happy with what you're doing so far and you're building up your business, then keep doing what you're doing and whatever's comfortable for you.
Yep, I mean pretty much when I first started out doing this, you know, like granted it was just, you know, back this past January, I was doing maybe one, two, maybe three, you know, I think my first month I did like 4 computers, basically like one a week.
Right.
And now I'm doing, you know, an average of 3 to 4 a week.
Good.
Right now I've got sitting in my kitchen, I've got 4 computers.
Good.
And, you know, I've got a couple business customers that, you know, I've got signed contracts with them for business, you know, for business arrangements and everything else like that for a maintenance contract.
Good.
So, you know, it's slowly working, but, you know, I just want to get my name out there. And then I've got this one that might be a really good. It's doing a fresh install. I mean, it's like going in, running wires, running the network, building computer systems.
Yeah, it sounds like you're establishing yourself. You got a lot of stuff rolling. You got the cards, you said, and the stuff on your car. But all right, let us have. What did you bring for us that you want to talk about today? I'll stop asking questions.
Oh, that's no problem. Oh, my goodness. I'm sitting here. I was just listening to some of your older podcasts, some of your either your nighttime podcast or some of your tech podcasts during the daytime. One of them that kind of like struck a note in my head, you were talking to, I think it might have been Steve D'Amico, about the anti-static wrist straps.
Right.
This was, I don't even know how long ago, but he was mentioning something about a wireless one. I did a little bit of research. Actually, when I was in school, they were using the wireless anti-straps. And I actually got them away from using it because they don't work 100% all the way.
Okay. Now, you tested them out? You know this?
I tested them out. I pulled one apart, and there's only like a little small ohm resistor in there. And it's not enough to actually dissipate, you know, the static electricity that's building up in your body.
I see.
So, you know, technically, you know, grounding yourself down or having it work grounded and you touching, you know, an unpainted part is still the best way to do it.
Okay. So you're a strong advocate of that.
Oh, yeah, I am. Because I was actually wearing one or whatever, and I touched a motherboard without touching anything else, and I felt a zap go through my finger.
You were wearing the wireless one?
Yeah, wearing the wireless one.
Okay.
And this, and I was actually wearing the wireless on the hand that I touched the board with.
Got it. Well, hey, it's good to know this.
Yeah.
Because that seemed a little too good to be true.
Yeah. And plus, anyway, the wired ones are actually a little bit cheaper than the wireless ones anyway.
Yeah, good call. They're just such a pain.
Yeah, they are.
It's like being on a leash.
Well, you're married, right?
No, no.
Okay, well, then you're not on the leash yet.
Cool. What else you got?
Oh, let's see now. Who's ready for story time?
We all are.
Well, listen, well, just recently, probably, listen, this past Thursday, I got a frantic call from a lady who was getting a lot of blue screens on her Windows 7 machine.
Okay.
Then she started mentioning something about saying that her copy of Windows 7 was not legal. And I'm like, what's your address? So she gave me her address. It was like 15 minutes away. So I, you know, I went over there real quick, started looking at it. And it really did sit there and say, it said, build 7600. This is not a legal copy of Windows.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where'd you get this from? She's like, well, I got it from somebody who built it. You know, this, the guy who originally built it actually put a legitimate copy of Windows XP. Then he took a job offer, closed his business, and sold it off to somebody else. Didn't change the number, so she called up. Somebody else answered the phone. He came out, took a look at it, upgraded it. Now, granted, this is for a little bit older of a lady. She's got a quad-core processor with 2 gigs of memory and, like, a gamer case.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the little thermostatic, you know, LCD display on the front. And she does, you know, work at home.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is way too powerful of a machine for you. But the first thing is first. We got to get you legal. I was sitting there. I was actually looking at, I used one of the tools that you guys recommended was for the portable apps. And I pulled up the product key code.
Right.
So I'm sitting there. I'm like, you know what? I want to try something. Never done this before. So I started Googling the product key code. I put in the first 5 letters and numbers, and right, it started autofilling the rest.
Right.
That's when you know when something's wrong. When Google knows what your product key is.
Oh, it started autofilling the rest.
Yeah, it started. Yeah, Google started autofilling the rest for her code.
Wow.
And it came up. The first line was for a website. It's called My Digital Life. And it, you know, actually had the product key code in big bold letters. And it said, hacked version of Windows 7 Ultimate.
Wow.
That's actually what I used, Tempster, was project key.
Man, that's so lame. So somebody just, those guys that bought that new, the business, just probably just got that off the internet and put, they're just loading up on all their customers' machines.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else has been infected or whatever, but she tried to get in touch with him the day that she called me. And as I know of right now, or whatever, she is not, they have not returned her phone call.
Of course not.
I wonder why.
Man, they're not long for this business.
Oh no. So I get over there, you know, I'm over there for like 2 hours just trying to figure out stuff. I'm like, and stupid me, I should have just, you know, did the Google search first, but I decided to call up Microsoft. Mm-hmm. That's when I got the idea to actually Google the product key.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was just took a machine, got it here. I ordered an OEM version off a Newegg for $99. Just got it in today. It's actually sitting in the kitchen right now, loading up all the updates.
Cool. Now, did you have to do a reinstall, or can you just change the product key?
I had to do a complete reinstall.
Yeah. What did you get? Home premium?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, $99 with next day shipping was like $122. Couldn't beat that price.
It's a good price.
Oh, yeah. And I did use your link, too, by the way.
Hey, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Yep. You know, until you said that, I was going to say I could get that at Micro Center for about the same price. But, yeah, use my link instead.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no Micro Center around here.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I got to stop talking about that. But that's it. It's not a good price. It's not a bad price. It's not a bad price.
Oh, no, it's not a bad price at all.
Is it 64-bit or 32?
32.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and it runs great. I have no problems with Windows 7 Home Premium.
Nope, I have actually, listen, I've got the Steve Ballmer edition for Windows Ultimate.
Yeah.
I've got Vista, or not Vista, but Windows 7 Business, 64 and 32-bit. The college that I was going to, they had a contract with the MSDNA, and I was able to get legal downloads of both of those.
Oh, cool.
So I got the 32 and the 64 with two different keys.
Sweet.
So I upgraded my girlfriend's computer from Vista.
Nice.
Yeah. And it runs a lot better. Let's just put it like that.
So you got to finish up grandma's gaming computer here.
So pretty much, you know, actually I left her my laptop.
What do you mean?
Because she does business from home. So she does work with lawyers and stuff like that. So she's sending and receiving emails all day long.
And this was loaner,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Free loaner.
Damn, man.
She's actually liking my laptop. It's a gateway that had Windows Vista Home Premium on there, and I upgraded it to Windows 7, and I haven't had any issues. I had more issues when I had Home Premium on there than I did, or Vista, before I switched it over to 7.
You just gave her your laptop to use?
Yep.
Okay.
I know where she lives. See, there's... I'm also, besides being, you know, a computer geek or whatever, I also run into burning buildings. I'm a volunteer firefighter also.
Uh-huh.
So I have ends with certain law officials and everything else like that in this area. So if I ever run into any problems, all I have to do is just give somebody a call.
Good. Well, that's cool. But still, that's very, very, very nice of you. Was she shocked? See, this is like going, you know, crazy with customer service. Was she shocked when you said, oh, just use my laptop in the meantime? Or did she think that's par for the course with computer repair people?
She didn't think it was par for the course, but, you know, when her and I, we were sitting there talking on the telephone or whatever, she had mentioned that, you know, she would need something to use, you know, if I might have had something. So she kind of like brought it up, but, you know, I was going to offer her one anyway. I mean, I've got enough to go around pretty much.
Oh, good.
Not for all of you in the room, though.
Hey, and that's a great idea. You know, stack up a bunch of loaner laptops and just have them, you know, on in stock and offer it if somebody does need it.
Yeah, I mean, that way or whatever, she can still make her money and I'm still making her money.
Right.
Or I'm making my money off of her.
Right. I got you.
So, yeah, if she can't work, then, you know, I'm not making any money off of her.
Good. All right, cool. Anything else on that one or?
No, that was pretty much about it. I mean, she just was a little demanding, but, you know, once I actually got over to her place and started talking to her or whatever, she kind of, you know, seemed to chill out and relax. Right. And, you know, I guess she was a little nervous on what was going on because she really didn't understand what was going on because she calls Firefox Foxfire.
Of course. That's a sure sign. That's a sign right there. I know. I've run into those people, too. At least they know that much.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They know what Foxfire looks like.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. What else?
Let's see. I've had a couple of them. Actually, I just got one that was dropped off to me today, and it actually has one of those fake antivirus Trojans on there that says it's from Dell.
And
it pops up and it says, you know, click here to buy this, but it's actually got the Dell logo on there.
Interesting.
I just heard about that today and I just saw it today myself, so I was very interested about it.
Where'd you hear about it?
Actually, one of the guys that I work with, he was just surfing around and next thing you know, it pops up on his computer saying, you know, your computer's infected, click here. And it looked, you know, it kind of looked just like the antivirus 2009, 2010. Like, you know, it looked like a legitimate thing. And luckily he didn't click on it, but every time that he clicked on X to close out of it, it started, you know, running the little fake scan.
Right. And it's branded with Dell. Interesting.
Yep, it's Brandon Waddell. So I just got it home.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to really take a look at it. So,
all right, let us know.
I don't know. It's really hard.
What do you mean? What are you going to try to do? What are you going to try to do to it?
Oh, let's see now. Well, I'm actually going to use all of your tools: Malwarebytes, Super Anti Spyware, Spybot Search and Destroy, MSE, Avast, CombofX.
Is that what you do? You just normally throw that the whole thing at it?
I throw it all at it until basically I'll throw one at it. If I think I got rid of it, then I'll start it up. If it doesn't, then I move on to the next one.
Gotcha.
And I just kind of, you know, use each program until I can actually get rid of it.
Gotcha.
There was one that I actually ran 9 different scans on there. And I was able to finally get rid of it using CombiFix.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to find the right tool. Good. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, I know. Because he tried using Malwarebytes. He thought he got rid of it, but it's plugged in there so bad. And this guy, he's not a... he's a little computer literate because he knows how to get in the registry, but unfortunately he got rid of some of the registry items.
Yeah, most people that get into the registry usually get themselves into trouble. I mean, you have to be very computer literate to not mess up yourself while you're in the registry.
Oh, yes, most definitely. That's why when I first get a computer, I actually pull the hard drive out. I image the hard drive. Then I start playing with the hard drive, and in case if I do something screwy and I start losing data, right, at least I have the backup.
Right. Good idea. All right, what else you got?
Just a couple little tips.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much with, you know, using like antivirus or like those fake Trojan or the ransomware, a lot of the times, you know, they won't let you actually get in to actually start using your tools because they'll start blocking it.
Right.
And everything else like that, because they'll notice the names and they'll start blocking. One thing that I've been doing lately is anything that I get that even resembles anything like a ransomware, I'll actually just pull the hard drive out and hook it up to another computer and just start scanning that using the other tools. That way I'm not initiating the master boot record. It's not actually running. It's just running it as a file system.
Right.
So I can just scan the individual files itself.
Now, what do you hook it up to when you say you take these drives out, actually physically out of the computer?
Yep, I physically take them out of the computer. I have either a SATA or an IDE connector that plugs it into a USB port, and it just recognizes it as an external hard drive.
And what do you hook it up to?
A laptop.
Okay.
I've got one laptop that I've got plastered with probably about 15 to 16 tools.
I see.
Good. And, you know, I just start running those tools. Once I think that I've got it done right, then I'll plug it back in, see if, if it'll load. And it doesn't load the virus, then I'm good.
Gotcha. So did that laptop ever get infected from plugging in a dirty drive to it?
Actually, I have yet to receive an infection off of that laptop.
Does that laptop have antivirus on it?
Yes. Actually, it's running Microsoft Security Essentials, Avast, Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes.
It's running Avast and Microsoft Security Essentials?
That is correct.
Wow.
And they don't argue with each other.
Really?
Nope. They don't see any false positives or anything else like that.
Wow.
So I'm actually really happy. I first started hearing about Microsoft Security Essentials, and I'm like, oh, great, another one of those things.
Right.
Then I started running it.
Hey, some people like it. I mean, it sure beats Windows One Care, but...
Yes, it does.
My experience with Windows Security Essentials is it's very quiet, and that worries me sometimes. Like, I don't like things intrusive and being popped up all the time, but at least tell me you're doing something, Security Essentials. At least find something every now and then. But it's too quiet for me. I mean, and I've heard other people have that too, but then some people say that it does find stuff, so...
Oh, yeah, it does. I was actually sitting there looking for some ransomware that somebody had infected on their system, and I was just trying to look to see if there was any other way than, you know, actually reinstalling the operating system, because unfortunately it actually embedded itself into the index, and it was just too far gone, too far deep, that I couldn't even save the operating system. It wouldn't even let me log in. It was one of those ones that did that every time that you logged in, it would just reboot itself.
Oh, yeah, they suck.
Yeah.
They're not
fun. But yeah, I was actually sitting there trying to figure out, you know, what I could do with that. And the page that actually had the information on it was the page that tried to infect it. Microsoft Security Essentials actually popped up a little box, stopped it, and about 2 minutes later, I was running just fine. No issues. Wow. I didn't even have to reboot my computer.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good one. Another good review for Security Essentials.
Yeah, it's about time Microsoft did something, right? Oh, wait a minute. They did 7.
Yeah, they did that.
That's about
good.
Time for that one, too.
Yeah, it's true. I still give them a hard time. What?
All right, you got 95, 98, then you got ME, and then you got XP.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also got 2000 thrown in there somewhere, too. Now you have Vista and Windows 7. Now, do you think, you know, that they tried to do Vista as kind of like a marketing scam as ME was for 98 to XP?
No. As a scam? You mean like...
Well, not as a scam or whatever, but, you know, as of, you know, kind of like a marketing ploy.
No, I don't think so. I think they just...
ME was trying to bring out, you know, like the new filing systems and everything else like that. They were trying to bring out the better, you know, the GUI interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still built on the Windows 98 architecture.
Right.
And then XP came out, and it was like, it was a godsend.
Yeah. I don't think so, man. I think they just screwed up. I think they wanted to get it out at a certain time. They had a deadline. It wasn't fully finished and optimized to the point that, like, Windows 7 is, where it runs fast, and it was, you know, Vista was bloated. It was like a half-done, clunky thing that they just spewed off the assembly line. I think they just literally just messed up and tried to rush it out as fast as they could when it just wasn't even close to done. That's my opinion. Seems typical of Microsoft to do something like that, but it took them a while, but they finally got it all squared away with Windows 7. But I don't think that it was like a marketing ploy. I think they wanted to get out a good updated operating system and not try to set up Windows 7 to be awesome by it. I think they just messed it up. I think they wanted it to be good.
I think they did too.
Yeah.
But then you also got to look at those, you know, those lovely Apple commercials between Windows and, you know, Mac or the PC Mac commercials.
Well, what about them?
Well, I mean, you know, you're just sitting there and you look at all the commercials that Mac put out, and then you look at all the commercials that Microsoft has put out.
Yeah.
There's, you know, no, I mean, you know, basically Apple was just sitting there just laughing at them, you know, in their face.
Right.
You know, for 6-7 years.
Yeah, they really jumped on that opportunity.
They did.
Got to say that about that.
You know, I mean, Windows 7, I mean, it's basically Windows done right. I do believe it. I mean, I love it. I've been running it since it was released as a beta. And even when I had it was released as a beta, I've never had any issues, not even with hardware, software, nothing.
Oh, me too. I like the beta, the release candidate. I ran the release candidate forever.
Oh, yeah, so did I.
I ran it up to the last second, and it was great. And I did buy the retail versions, and they're great too. I'm running Home Premium. I mean, I'm using Macs right now almost exclusively, but on my Windows computers, I have a couple laptops that are running it. They don't. I got to say, Windows 7, it doesn't crash as much as the others. Let's put it that way. I still get blue screens on stuff and whatever, so I'm accepting that. But it's a lot better than any of the other Windows I've used.
Yeah, so it is. Yeah, Windows 7 is definitely a better one.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm sorry.
You got anything else for us?
Pretty much, you know, just with organization and, you know, the way that I try to, you know, I have customers, they fill out a form when they drop off a computer.
Okay.
Basically, you know, with like their name, address, phone number, and just like a brief description and, you know, how they want to be contacted, just in case if I'm not there when they drop it off.
Now, you work from home, so you have them come to your house and drop off computers, or do you go out and get them, or how do you do that?
Actually, I used to have people come to my place, and then I was like, you know what? I've got too much stuff around here, and I just don't want people to see, you know, what I have. I mean, it's, you know, more of a security thing mm-hmm. than really anything else. Unfortunately, Binghamton has gotten a bad nickname. They actually call us like the Little Big Apple, and it's not for the good reasons either.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So one thing that I did was that I started offering free pickup and delivery for any of my clients that live in the county that I live in.
What if they don't?
If they don't, it's usually, you know, depending on how far away that they live. I mean, my furthest customer that I actually went to was about 2.5 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
I basically charged him $25
for pickup.
Right. He,
Jesus Christ. Wow.
That was just for the pickup. Then it was a 25 for, you know, the delivery or something like
okay.
that.
Okay.
But the one thing is that if when I, you know, with most of my customers, they're like, they're actually just like you, you know, my prices are really so low and everything mm-hmm. else like that.
Right.
95% of them actually pay me more than what I tell them that they have to pay me.
Right.
So like I had one person or whatever that I was only charging like $90 for something or whatever. I ended up walking out of there with like 120.
Right. Hey, I can't knock it, man, because that's exactly what I did when I started. And I had your identical mentality of doing this. And, you know, I bloomed out a pretty good business out of it when I got my shop. I worked in volume more than anything else. Like that's how I made my money, in volume. Mm-hmm. And it worked. So I can't knock it. But I do cringe a little bit, knowing if I was going to do it now, I'd probably do it a little different. I'd probably go with the higher price, but I'm not sure if it's going to work because I didn't live through it. But you know, everybody's got their way of doing it, and I'm so with you on. I know exactly how you're feeling when you're charging these low prices, and people are paying you more than you actually charge. And you know, I think a lot of other people, a lot of other techs out there, are kind of cringing. But I know what you were doing. I know what you're doing, and hey man, it's how I did it. So like I said, I can't knock it. I really can't knock it.
Yep. I mean, and also actually kind of makes me feel also, you know, better inside too, because, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm offering them, you know, my service. I tell them what, you know, I'm charging. If they want to pay me more, you know, I don't argue with them.
Right.
But, you know, then that also makes me feel a little bit better because, you know, maybe I got their computer done a little bit faster than what they expected.
Right.
Or, you know, or I was able to fix it right there on site without even having to take it.
Right.
And, you know, it just, and then I always leave them a couple extra business cards and a couple brochures so they can pass out to their friends. And, you know, that's pretty much how I've been spreading the word.
It's, you know, I know what you mean, and it does make you feel good. But you know what? I especially lately with me, when I pay for a service, I'm thinking in my mind now, because every time I buy something now or get a service, I kind of try to relay it back to how I was in the computer repair field, what I was charging and the service I delivered. And I'm kind of happy as a customer if somebody just does an awesome job and charges me a fair rate. I just want a fair rate. I don't want them to undercharge me. I really don't. I want them to charge me a fair rate. I'm willing to pay that. And if they do a fantastic job above and beyond my expectations, I will call them back and I will continue to pay that fair price. So, I think you got to think that people are willing to pay for great service, and it sounds like you give great service. So don't undercut yourself. You know, don't keep your prices too low forever.
Oh, I won't. I'm looking at maybe keeping my prices about this for maybe, you know, at least for the rest of this year.
Yeah.
That way, you know, I can get my name out and maybe start getting a customer following. And then, you know, on some of my services, you know, I might leave this, you know, I might leave the pricing alone. And then some of them I might raise up, you know, maybe $10 to $15, something that's not going to, you know, I'll slowly increase it just to see, you know, where I can actually cut my prices off,
right.
But I'm always constantly going around to the different shops and everything else like that, incognito, of course. You know, I actually borrow my girlfriend's car when I go around and do some price checking at other shops.
Really? And what are those guys charging?
Let's see now. Well, there's one company. It's do you care if I say their names or?
I don't care.
Red Barn Computers. They make their own product line. The guys who own it, they do know their stuff. They do a heck of a job. But unfortunately, I think that they charge way too much.
How long have they been in business?
They've been in business probably about 10 to 12 years. And I mean, they actually do computers. They do servers. They build servers. They do high-end graphics. They do, you know, graphics printing, shirt design, stuff like that.
Why would they be in business 12 years if they charge too much?
I don't know, because I think at that time or whatever, there really wasn't that many people in this area that offer the services that they offered.
Gotcha.
And their markup on their prices. I mean, granted, I know how to, you know, price match my stuff. So right. I just think what they're charging for the items that they have in their store, I know that they're trying to make money, but
right.
I went into a Mac store and I wanted to buy and this is a local guy. He's actually the only Mac certified repair tech in this county.
Right.
And he was charging $47 for a 6-foot mini DVI or a mini display port to an HDMI. Six I went on to,
mini, oh, okay, to HDMI. Yeah, how, yeah, much, six, how much was he charging?
He was charging like $47.
Okay.
Well, on the part that was going towards the mini display port, I happen to recognize a name that I use really frequently, Monoprice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he bought that at Monoprice.
Exactly.
Right.
$11.
Hey, you know what though? I mean, if you go to like any other retail store, especially like the big box stores, they kill on cables. They will kill you on cables. So he's just price matching those guys. He's probably still even less than those guys. But
there's nobody in this area that actually would carry that cable.
Really? And Monoprice is going to knock everyone out of the water. It is kind of crazy with cables. I got to give you that.
Well, for the same price that I could have bought that cable for off of Monoprice, I bought the mini display port to HDMI. Then I bought 2 6-foot HDMI cables, the newer ones, the 1.3s or whatever. And then I bought a pair of cable clumpers for like $45, and that included shipping.
Wow.
So
there you go.
Well, but I mean, you know, he's the only place where you can actually get, you know, certified work done on Macs. Okay. He's only, you know, not the Best Buy here doesn't even do it.
Right.
They don't even sell the Macs here.
On that Best Buy, really?
Yeah, at that Best Buy. Actually, the closest, well, you can travel 45 minutes north to Syracuse, and you can go to a mall, and there's an Apple store right in there.
Hmm.
But the guy here, he charges the exact same price minus the gas.
Yeah, no, I know there's one Apple guy around here, too. I've taken a couple things to him, because he will do he'll do warranty work on Apples.
Yep. One thing that I'm looking at, and I think I saw from one of your shows, was the guy that was down in New York City who was doing the replacements on the iPhones, doing the screen replacements.
Right.
Charging like $75, getting them overseas for like, you know, $12 to $25. So, you know, just doing like the correct screen repairs on the iPhones. I don't know of anybody around here that does it. I don't even know if he does it.
Huh. There you go. There's a lot of ways to make business now, make money now doing things like that.
Oh yeah,
it's really a lot of doors opening up in the tech world for doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, you do void the warranty on your iPhone though.
Yeah,
hey, but so, who cares?
Yeah, let's see what the public thinks.
Yep, exactly. Now going back to, you know, like how you were saying, you know, do I always go and pick them up or do I have them drop them off?
Mm-hmm.
I like I said, you know, I used to have them. You know, some people drop them off, but then I started getting a little bit weary because, you know, I have a 6-year-old son and, you know, just the stuff here, I just don't want anything to happen.
Right.
And so what I did was I actually got in touch with one of my local business people that I know and actually set up a drop off location at his 3 store locations.
And what does he sell?
He actually does what they call pack and mailing. He packs, you know, you can pack and ship pretty much anything that you want. No alcohol, no guns, you know, stuff like that. Not even tobacco, unfortunately.
Right.
But, you know, you go in, you fill out a little piece of paper. And it's a $19.99 diagnostic fee. Within about 24 hours, I'll get back in touch with the person. They want to do the work, then I do the work. They basically come in. They take care of everything. I get paid, you know, what I need to get paid minus, you know, 20%.
I think
that's basically his cut.
That's a great deal. Setting up a drop-off location at a certain business, that gives you makes you more reputable. It stops people from coming to your house if you don't want them to be there for whatever reason. And it gives you more control over the situation. And it even takes you out of the equation in some of the customer service where, well, hopefully the guy at the counter that they're dropping it off to is a good dude. But that you just go and pick it up. That's a great idea.
Yeah, the people that they actually work there, they do have really good customer service skills. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why, you know, I even really kind of started thinking about it was using those because, you know, I've been in a customer service for about 13 years. I know what it takes to run a business. I know what it takes to actually bury a business.
Uh-huh.
I've seen them thrive. I've seen them go over.
Right. Yeah, that's good for you.
I don't want to be the latter of the two.
Yeah, no, it's good knowledge. You sound like you're doing it right.
Well, I'm trying to. With all the help I can get, and actually your podcasts have been helping me out a lot.
Hey, no problem. Thank the guests. I'm telling you. It's all the guests.
Where is Steve D'Amico? Is he here? No.
He's not in the chat right now. But
he's the one that I owe a big thanks to.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That and probably Tempster and just pretty much any of your guests.
Yeah, I think everybody has something good to contribute, and I totally encourage it. And if anybody else wants to come on Podnuts Daily, like do what Scott did. You just go to podnuts.com/guests, and you just sign up. It's literally that easy, and you're in. Scott, let me play. Speaking of Timster, let me play a voicemail from him right now.
Yep, no problem.
Here we go. Oh, actually, you're not going to be able to hear it. You're going to have to turn on
mute
your mic and turn on your Ustream feed volume. And here is Timster's voicemail.
Hey, Steve, it's Timster calling about a follow-up on the customer I talked about last. It was a little bit unstable. Most techs would have walked away from that type of customer and refused money because it was would be too much of a headache. Well, I'm now in talks with this customer and her husband. I'm giving prices for building a high-end computer system, gaming system for her husband, and they'll pay me whatever I think is fair for my time to build it. So, you know, to all you techs, you know, I mean, if you got the patience, I mean, money is money. It kind of surprised me, but looks like I'm going to be making a fair amount of money off of this one customer that a lot of techs would have turned their back on. So, just to follow up on that, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, you know, I don't regret it, but. But, you know, I'm not going to turn my back on it. And money is money, you know. So, okay, Steve, talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, not sure if you heard that, Scott. But, Timster, I got to say to you, you know, best of luck on that. Best of luck. You're skating on thin ice with that, I think, personally. I mean, like you're saying, money's money, but... You know, for anybody who needs a little history on this, that guy or the customer, the girl, the guy's wife, she's schizophrenic and taking on medication to handle that. Now, I understand people have problems. I really do. But I tried to keep mentally unstable people off of my lines because it can come back and haunt you because you add this level of unpredictability in there that you just don't know what these people are going to do. And what mood they're going to be in and what's going to happen. It's just like explosive. So if you think, Timster, that she's chilled out enough and can handle this, then go for it and do it. Like I said, I wish you the best of luck. And you had a successful experience with this customer. So, okay, why not try again? But to me, it still sounds a little hairy. Just got to be honest with you. So all I have to say to you is good luck. Please let us know how that turns out. All right, Scott, you back with us?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Actually, I just got a quick question about that. Now, was this the one that was like the ex-military one or the one that was...
It was just... No, this was a woman that that called up Timster and was very distraught, went into apathy on the phone, then became very neurotic about when the computer was being done and called him at 7 o'clock in the morning. It was that
customer. Okay. Oh, it was that one. The one that the brother's fisherman or whatever. I think I was just listening to that one last week.
I might have been. I don't remember I don't remember all the details, but I remember the juicy stuff from it.
Timster, all I gotta say is, man, you got a big set of cojones if you go back and see her. Oh my goodness, man, she does sound like a grade A number one psycho.
Timster, we got your back. We got your back, but
yes,
be
we
careful.
Got your back, but way back.
Oh, that was funny.
Especially if you told her where you lived at. I think you think that was one with a train. I'm sitting here. I have a pretty good memory with the podcast that I listen to, so I'm sorry.
The train?
Yeah. There might have been somebody else that you were talking to.
I don't know. No. I think I'm not sure. Like I said, I can't remember the details on it, but there might have been.
But those are the two ones that actually stand out the best.
If anybody wants to know what Scott's talking about, you got to listen to past Podnuts Dailies.
They're available on iTunes.
Yeah, actually, I just fixed the feed for the iTunes for all the shows. It used to be the shows would cut off after like 50 shows or something on iTunes, but now you can get them all. Every Podnuts Daily is on there, and like every other show is on there too. All the way through the whole list, so no limits.
Oh, great. Thanks. Here goes the rest of my day.
Oh, man,
Leo, I'm sorry if you're listening in. I'm sorry, but I've lost you as...
Oh, I love to hear that.
As anybody.
I love to hear that. Let me read an email here from Wes. He says, hey, Steve, my name is Wesley. I've been listening to your show since they started. The weather is sunny and hot down here in Atlanta, Georgia. I wanted to share with you and your listeners a device I recently found and acquired. The device is called IODD. It's basically a 2.5-inch SATA hard drive case, but with a few neat tricks. The IODD can emulate CD-ROMs, DVD-ROMs, and Blu-ray discs from ISO images stored on the SATA drive. And with a firmware update or two, it can also emulate block devices like hard drives, both fixed and removable, along with floppy disks. All of IODD emulated devices can be booted from over USB. It has an eSATA port on it, and it's a read-only lock switch. I've been hunting around for such a device for years now, and it was very close to building my own when I found it. The cost of the device is $70, but believe it will save me, your listeners, and landfills far more over time. For more information on this lovely device, it can be found at i-odd.com or iodd.us or iodd-usa.com. Let me go there right now. i-odd.com. This thing sounds pretty awesome. I got to take a look at this. Wow.
Yeah, the one thing that I really like about it is that you can actually sit there and run stuff as a read-only.
Yeah, this is neat. Oh, this is very neat, man. This is a great find. It's cool looking, too.
Oh, those are pretty.
Aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Let me take a look at the other picture here. Oh, no picture of that. Beautiful find. I love it. IODD. So it's at i-odd.com. Great email, Wes. Thanks a lot for that.
It looks like they have a couple different products. They got like the external hard drive, and then they also, it looks like they might be coming out with a memory stick style in the same way.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one that doesn't have the picture?
Yeah, that's the one that doesn't have the picture.
Huh. Memory stick type. Neat.
I love it.
Wes goes on to say he's not affiliated with them. He just likes the product. So I'm going to put that disclaimer in there for him. Okay. David says, hard to find a small set of screwdrivers with magnetic tips. I found these at designnotes.com. It's a 6-piece screwdriver set with soft grip. So I think David actually bought the laptop repair videos and wanted to get some small screwdrivers, but it was hard to find them with magnetic tips. Let me go to designnotes.com. He said it's product number...
Oh, that's going to be good.
Or the order code, it's like 8 digits here. It's VTSCRSET8. Let me punch that in and see if I can get a URL for you guys. This is at designnotes.com. Simple search. Let me do a search for that.
It doesn't work in the simple search.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's just the Velamans. I love Velamans. This is the ones I get at Micro Center. I don't have the soft gripped, but it's a Velaman, V-E-L-L-E-M-A-N, 6-piece screwdriver set with soft gripped. And you could just do a Google search for that. I bet this isn't the only place that has them. Ooh, they're nice. And I got to say, my favorite screwdriver set I use for laptops are Velamans. There you go. Velamans aren't like really high quality stuff. I mean, they're like the cheapest ones you get at these stores. But for some reason, they just turned out to be the best screwdrivers I ever used. So I'm all for Velaman. And thank you for that, David. Good email. Got a bunch of emails here. Let me see if I can roll through a bunch of them here. Antonio says, I have a Toshiba notebook on which hung during a BIOS update due to a hard drive error. Now the notebook is damaged because there's no way to repair. To make the PC working, I have to buy a new motherboard, and it's not new. Okay, he's got a bit of a language barrier here, so I'm trying to translate it best I can. He says, my question, is there any way to repair this Toshiba notebook, or is it better to put it in the junk? Best regards, Antonio. Okay, so look, if you're in the middle of flashing your BIOS and it gets hung up and you have an error, look, the only way I know to fix that is to either replace the BIOS chip if possible, but on a notebook, a lot of times the BIOS chip is soldered to the motherboard. It's not removable. It's usually pretty bricked, from my understanding, unless anybody knows of a special secret way when you're flashing your BIOS, if you crash the BIOS, to fix it. Do you know of any way, Scott?
Not right off the top of my head. Actually, I kind of Googled, you know, the Toshiba notebook hung during BIOS, and one of the major hits that popped up was, of course, from Toshiba, and it says basically to send it to them.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Like a premier authorized service provider.
if Toshiba can fix it without replacing the motherboard, that might be your only feasible way of doing it. But you're gonna be, I would replace the motherboard. If Toshiba was no help to me and I had to fix this, I would replace the motherboard. Go on eBay, price out this motherboard. You know, find out the model number, get the model of this motherboard and price it out. If it's crazy expensive, then I think it's better to put this notebook in the junk, as you say. So that's my best advice for you, Antonio. Sorry.
It also depends on the age of the laptop, too. I mean, yeah. You know, if it's, you know, something within the last 2 years, it might be worth actually working on. But if it's something, I'd say, you know, 4 or 5 years old or whatever, I wouldn't spend the time or the money on, you know, actually replacing it. Because by the time you actually pay somebody to replace a motherboard and buy the motherboard, you could have bought yourself a new laptop.
Right. I think he did say in the email that the laptop is not new. So I'm guessing it might be a couple years old.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. All right, Peter says, just watch a video with Brian from Britech, and that's britechcomputers.co.uk. He says, this is a great tool for techies. Here is the link to the forum with the video. All right, so this is from Britech, Peter sent me. If you go to Britech's forums, it's britechcomputers.co.uk. That's B-R-I-T-E-C computers.co.uk/forum. Just go in the forums and do a search for system repair engineer. And it looks like a pretty cool tool that Peter found here with a video. Britech does a lot of cool videos, actually. And his YouTube ID, let me just go to YouTube and see what his username is. Britech09. So you can go to YouTube also and go to type in Britech09, watch all Britech's videos. This one's called System Repair Engineer. It's a diagnostic maintenance software tool by Britech. There you go. So good find, Peter. Check that out. Looks like it's very useful. And let me close some tabs here. I'm going crazy with my Foxfire tabs.
Good one.
All right. This is from David. It says, hey, hello. I purchased and I'm a big fan of your video course. I have an Inspiron Dell 6000 with a dark LCD. I replaced the LCD, the inverter, and the cable. Could the motherboard be the problem? Computer produces a picture, but it's very dark, as if the inverter was the problem. However, the inverter also seems to be bad. I tested it on another Inspiron, and I still have a dark screen. When I use a new inverter with the old screen on a working computer, the picture looks fine. My diagnosis, failed inverter and motherboard not capable of powering it. Is that possible? Okay, this got a little confusing. Basically, this is an oddball case. He's got an Inspiron here with a dark LCD, which means you could still see the icons and the graphics on the laptop. It's just... there's no light. There's no backlight. So you're not going to see the full, crisp, clear, colorful, bright picture. But you're still going to notice that the screen works. If that's the case, you either have a bad bulb in your screen or you have a bad inverter. And the inverter is just a circuit board that powers the light bulb, your fluorescent bulb in your LCD screen. Well, he replaced both the screen and the inverter on this laptop, and it's still doing the same thing. Now, The inverter and the screen both get their signals, their instructions from the motherboard of the laptop. So if you have a dark LCD and you replace the screen, you replace the inverter, and you replace the LCD cable, then you definitely have a problem with your motherboard. Or one would think that it would seem you have a problem with your motherboard because that's the only thing left in the equation. Interesting problem you have there. So, yeah, David, I think you got a failed motherboard on that one. What I would do in that case, if I think I have a bad motherboard, is take a dry toothbrush, you know, take the LCD cable that attaches to the screen from the motherboard to the screen, take that cable, unattach it from the motherboard, and take the toothbrush and just clean the connector that cable attaches to. Maybe there's something in there that's blocking the connection to the signal, to the inverter, or to the screen that's causing that problem. Yeah, in that case, I think you got a bad motherboard. Something in the circuitry of the motherboard there is probably causing that. That's my best guess on that one. It's from David. Do you have any suggestions on that one, Scott?
I would actually try to hook up an external monitor to see if it would, you know, you could isolate it to the actual graphics card. But then again, you know, the graphics card is soldered onto the motherboard, so you're going to be replacing that anyway.
Yeah, you can use an external monitor. But see, the thing is, he's already seeing the graphics. On those dark LCDs, you could still see the graphics in the LCD, but they're not lit, so you can't see them brightly. You could hook up an external monitor just to make sure the graphics are okay, but, you know, if you could see the Windows logo and the BIOS and everything, even with the dark LCD, your graphics card's usually okay. Because the graphics card doesn't supply the power to light the screen. It just supplies the graphics.
Right.
So that's the only reason I didn't say hook up an external monitor, but it's always a good idea just to check out if the graphics card's all right.
And the other and another possible way, or what, you know, because there is voltage going through there to power the inverter and also to power the backlight bulb and everything else like that, he could always run a multimeter on it just to see if it is actually getting any juice, or if anybody might know, you know, what the correct voltage is going through there, which would probably be very minimal. You know, that way he could also eliminate that too.
That's a great idea.
On both sides of the cable.
It's a great idea. If you can figure out what pins on that cable are, you know, which wires on that cable actually provide the voltage without frying anything, take a multimeter and check it out. Good suggestion. All right, this is from Rob. He says, he laughs. He goes, ha, 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 even AOL is on your side. And he gives me a link here. Let me open up this link. I read this before. AOL.com. They have an article in here, System Restore to the Rescue. And it's all about using System Restore, like I talk about in all my shows, how I love it. And it actually goes through Windows 7, Windows Vista, and Windows XP, and using System Restore as a tool to fix your computer. There we go. Even AOL is on my side. I actually emailed him back and I said, that's great. I wish I had someone better on my side, though. And I like when people are on my side, but having AOL on your side is like having somebody that you're like, okay, he's on my side. Big deal. But thanks for the email. That was pretty funny. Let me see what James wrote us here. Let's see, James. Okay, this is for Linux for the rest of us. This is a long email. I'm kind of running out of breath here. Let me save the rest of the emails for the next episode of Pod Nuts Daily. We're going to do that on Wednesday. And also, we're going to be doing Linux for the rest of us tonight at 8:30. So guys, definitely tune in for that. It's about 8 o'clock now, so we got about half an hour before we start that. So we're going to end off this show for today. Scott, I want to thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I had a blast. This is actually my first podcast that I've ever done, and I really enjoyed it. So hopefully, you know, my time and schedule can, you know, can do some future podcasts.
I would love that, definitely. I mean, I love when new people come on because they kind of break the ice. They see that it's not a real scary thing that they're doing here. You know what I mean? You weren't nervous, were you?
A little bit. But then, you know, just talking to you right before the show, you know, that kind of helped it, you know, help get the jitters away.
Yeah, we get rid of the jitters before you start the show.
And you're also, you know, a good person that you can definitely lead in different segues. And, you know, you kind of help lead the conversation to make it a little bit more interesting.
Well, thanks. Yeah, if anybody does have a concern about that, too, I'll steer you. Don't worry. But now that you did do one show, Scott, I definitely hope you sign up for more and keep doing the jobs. Let us know how it's going with that. You know, let us know in the forums, even if you don't come on a show. And good luck with your business.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And, you know, like what Steve said, and, you know, I've said earlier, just go straight to podnuts.com/guest. Make sure you click on edit this page and then, you know, sign up for a spot.
Yeah.
That way you can get on, you can have some fun and, you know, take an hour out of your day to relax.
Good. I'm glad you consider this relaxing. It's a little therapeutic. It used to be for me when I come home after doing all these jobs and then I just talk about them. It's very therapeutic.
Yes. Therapy is talking and talking is therapy.
All right, Scott. Well, thank you very much again for joining the show.
And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's going to be it for today's episode of Pod Nuts Daily. See you all pretty soon. See you for Linux for the rest of us. Music for Pod Nuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/EvanKing.